Good day to you, brethren. It's that time of the week again. Comes around fast. Matt is beginning to regret having not taken the opportunity to buy a desk fan and some spare underwear. Josh is filling his room with smoke from his Zen sticks and is desperately trying to find the key to the window. And Matthew has the Book of Constitutions ready to fulfill his necessary or rather critical role as club attorney. It's the Leeds Light Blues podcast. Let's be having you.
Hello and welcome to the Leeds Light Blues podcast. You're joining me, your host, Brother Matt Namiria, and with me tonight,
Brother Josh Doherty Turnbull,
Brother Matthew Wharton,
and Brother Sean Butler.
Brother Sean, thank you very much for coming along. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
Tell us a bit about yourself.
Sure. So, to anyone who doesn't know me, I'm Sean Butler. I'm the communications manager at UGLE and the editorial manager of Freemasonry Today. I became a Freemason back in 2015 when I was initiated into Greenwich Meridian Lodge in Metropolitan Grand Lodge of London. I am now, I was junior deacon before the shutdown of Letchworth Lodge, which is the staff lodge at UGLE, and I joined the Royal Arch in 2018. So that's me in a nutshell.
Okay, so without any further ado then, brethren, we'll do the first toast of the evening. Brother Josh, are we charged in the south?
We are charged in the south.
Brother Sean, are we charged in the west?
We are charged in the west.
Brethren, the Queen and the Craft.
Queen and the Craft.
And tonight I am drinking the Aberlour once again, the single malt Scotch whisky. What's everyone else on?
Northern Monk, Tidal.
Very nice.
Dr. Pepper.
Take a guess what I'm drinking.
Yorkshire Clear,
yeah.
Cop out.
We have a very good episode lined up for you guys tonight. What we're going to do first, though, is we're going to dig into charity updates. So this week, a couple of things that's been going on. An update on the Masonic Meal Appeal. We now stand at 409 donations so far into the second month, £17,902. So very well done, brethren. Keep that going. It's the Freemasons of Yorkshire, West Riding, supporting the NHS, hospices, carers and frontline workers. If you want to take part, if you want to donate, if you want to find out more, is wrprovince.org.uk. Head on over to the website, check it out. Meanwhile, the Harrogate Scrubbers initiative, we heard about a few episodes back, they had £5,000 worth of scrubs fabric and £700 worth of donations from West Yorkshire Freemasons delivered over in Harrogate Way. So that was a great contribution, that, and well done to them. Matthew, could you give us a brief update into the Interclub Social that we've got coming up?
Of course. So the Sarsen Club, Essex Cornerstone Club, Prosum Semper, Leeds, obviously, Leicestershire and Rutland, the Hollywell Club and the Cambridge Club, who are the new club joining this time, will be doing another Young Masons Intersocial Club with Dr. Vicky Carroll, the Museum of Freemasonry's director down at Freemasonry's Hall. That's happening on Sunday the 31st of May, so by the time that you're actually listening to this podcast, it will have unfortunately happened, but we're really looking forward to that one, and we're looking forward to getting to know that our brothers from Cambridgeshire
Absolutely.
As well.
Since our last podcast, we actually had a rather unusual event, the first ever Leeds Light Blues Age of Empires 2 tournament, which was streamed live on Twitch. Josh, you want to tell us a little bit about that and how that went down?
Yeah, we started a Twitch channel. That happened, and as one of the first events up on there, we held an Age of Empires tournament. It was great fun. We won, we lost, we got absolutely annihilated by some computers. That was pretty embarrassing. What we're going to do is just try again at some point, just with less of them and more of us. Even when we outnumbered them, we got demolished, so we'll make it easier for ourselves and see if we stand a better chance.
Definitely. We'll be doing that again as well. So keep your ears to the ground on our Facebook and our Twitter, facebook.com/Leeds Light Blues and twitter.com/Leeds Light Blues. And we'll let you know when that's coming on again.
And now Twitch, Leeds Light Blues.
And Twitch, Leeds Light Blues now as well. So go check that out. New follows for this
week. I love
week.
This bit. We've I love a... hearing you butcher these names.
Apologies in advance. If I butcher your name on the podcast, I'm very sorry, and you are more than welcome to write in and tell me phonetically how it should have been pronounced. But anyway,
write into the secretary.
Write into the secretary at events. at Light Blues. Secretary at lightblues.co.uk. So the new likes for this week, brethren, are Gareth Langdon, Victor Chiobanu, Kofi Hines, Jan Ian Ashali, Nathan Moss, Ian Gruev, MD Josem Uden. Christine Chapman.
Cheers.
We had her on last week, of course, on the podcast. Dale Hall and Steve Moss. So, brethren, raise a glass to our guests.
Are the two mosses in there?
To our guests.
To our guests. Sorry, were the two mosses in there? Are they related?
Nathan Moss and Steve Moss, perhaps, I don't know.
Brothers.
To the Moss brothers.
Sean knows.
Those suit makers.
I know everyone.
Those famous suit makers.
For those of you that don't know, if you want a shout out on the podcast, head on over to facebook.com/LeedsLightBlues and give us a like and we'll read out your name on the podcast. I'll give you a shout out. So, Brother Sean.
Hello.
UGLE comms manager. So, talk to us. How did you get into this role? How did it all come about?
Oof. Well, I originally joined UGLE back in April of 2017 as communications executive, and my overall responsibility at that point was social media. So obviously, as you may well know, from the comms team at Freemasons Hall, we administer the social media accounts for UGLE, Freemasonry Today, the Royal Arch, and Freemasons Hall. So there's a whole load of work that went on to kind of try and build the profile of all those pages across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, not so much, because I feel like for a long time, the YouTube space for Freemasonry has been somewhat commandeered by some slightly odd individuals. But what we're actually actively doing now is trying to take that back. So obviously last year we had the Discover Freemasonry video, which was, I think, pretty much the first big set piece video that we've done in a while. I think it was really good. It was really well made.
It was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Well awesome. Received.
Yeah, really good. Yeah. Really
yeah. Good. It was, I think it touched all the kind of areas that we want to really emphasize, because I think something that we've missed is that kind of elevator pitch. Why should someone want to become a Freemason? So a lot of the work that we're doing at the minute is around that sort of area. And then, yeah, my work kind of carried on 2 years working on social, putting out new content, just trying to build my experience in as many ways as I possibly could. And then in August of last year, I was promoted to my current role, and my current role focuses very much on membership communications, you know, communicating to you guys, communicating to our 200,000 members in, you know, provinces and districts all over the place, and just making sure that the provincial communications officers, who are the provincial kind of comms reps, have everything they need to be able to kind of communicate what's happening in the provinces as effectively as they possibly can. My other hat is obviously with FMT as editorial manager. So I sit on the editorial panel of the magazine and put together stories and stuff that are put forward to the panel for consideration. So that's, you know, the big features, which has been an interesting task for the upcoming edition.
I bet, yeah.
due to obvious circumstances. But it's a really interesting job, and it kind of varies on a day-to-day basis. It's always something different, but challenging, but rewarding at the same time.
How long does it take to formulate an entire edition of FMT from start to finish?
So essentially, the way it starts is that I will come up with a list of stories that I've kind of found or think are particularly interesting or that, you know, members would find interesting. I put that into a list, and we work very closely with our contract publishers, a company called We Are Sunday, and they basically have, you know, people that work on our magazine that sit on the editorial panel. And I basically take those ideas into that meeting, which happens kind of four times a year for each edition. And I pitch the ideas and kind of say, look, I think this would be a really good feature for this reason, or this would be a really good feature for that reason. And then we basically plot that in. And then probably about one and a half, two months later, we start obviously across that time to start sending them content, you know, getting them in contact with people for interviews, that sort of thing. They then, in normal times, will send out a photographer. The photographer will get, you know, the fantastic shots that we see in the magazines. And then, yeah, they plot it together for us. They send it over to me. I'll then proof it, make sure that it's good. It looks nice. It looks crisp and professional. There's no kind of faux pas in terms of language that's been used, etc. And then they go to print. And then it's obviously usually timed around quarterly communication of Grand Lodge. So, yeah, essentially from start to finish, you're looking at probably three months or so. You know, as soon as we finish work on one, I think there's about a week or two until we're then having the next editorial panel meeting. So it's quite fast paced. It's always kind of something there that we've got to be considering.
Do you have one of those moments where just before you send the approval email, your finger just kind of hovers over the button and you go, I better check that one more time?
Yeah, you know what? It's a nightmare, because the lucky thing is that it's not, thankfully, it's not solely on me. You know, they obviously have people that are professional copywriters and stuff who are checking this stuff over. But Absolutely. You know, there've been a few times. There've been a few times where it's like, I don't know if you've ever seen this, where you've read something so often that a word just doesn't look like it's spelt right, and it's like, I think with this edition, it was something like house or something. I was looking at it and I was just thinking, house. Yeah, that is definitely how you spell house. But for some reason, it just didn't look right. It was really confusing. In the end, I had to send it to a colleague of mine, and they looked at it. It was like, yep, that's how you spell house. I can confirm. That's how you spell house. So I did feel a bit stupid, but sometimes mistakes happen. But you know, they're always rectified. But as I say, one of the copywriters or something who step in and saves the day.
I can tell you now, Sean, the amount of times I've hovered over the button to publish this podcast and just hoped, prayed, and maybe given it a second or third check. You talk about misspelling of words. I'm more about checking for words that definitely should not be published or put out into broadcast.
So, I don't know what the f*** you're talking about. Oh.
So, complete respect to it. And obviously, a big operation that. It's obviously not an easy one. There's a lot of collaboration involved with it to get it right, yeah, and everything. So I can completely understand from an editorial perspective. I noticed that you've got a England rugby top on there as well.
Yeah, for my sins.
No. It's don't worry, mate. Everyone up in the North don't just support League. I am a Union fan as well. So.
Oh, right. That's good. Yeah, I was thinking Leeds might be a bit unsure, but no, the right type of rugby, that's good.
Absolutely.
No, I've seen on Facebook and Twitter actually last week or two, give them a shout out to the English Masonic rugby guys who have been really working hard on social media to push that idea to have some kind of match against the Welsh boys. So that could be, if any of you guys are interested and you're on Facebook, or I know Josh, you're not, but I'm sure we can get you in touch another way if you're interested and you want to put your name down for consideration. Do you guys have a provincial rugby team?
No.
And I have zero athletic ability.
We do have...
I am built for comfort, not speed.
We could turn up and just see what happens. You just have to get an ambulance on standby.
Josh, you'd make a fantastic prop.
Isn't it? It fits everyone. Rugby's a good game. Like, I remember in PE, it was like, there was no excuse for people to not do it. You know, that everyone's got a role, essentially. Yeah. No, it's a fantastic initiative, and actually I think it's something for people to focus on during lockdown. It's a bit of a distraction, and it's an opportunity for us as, you know, as Freemasons to look into the future and think, you know what, actually that would be awesome, wouldn't it? Mm. You know, English Freemasons against Welsh Freemasons. But I think, yeah, work's ongoing, and I know down here in Met there's kind of in the works is potentially a new kind of London Masonic rugby team coming together. Wow. But I'm sure we'll hear more about that over time.
I keep a list of Leeds Like Blues ideas, and one of the things on there is challenging either lodges in the area or other Like Blues clubs to various sporting events. So yeah, it's definitely something that's been on our radar as well. Go-karting, yeah, I think was on there. There was talks of football.
I think the Cornerstone Club, they did go-karting not long ago, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did, yeah.
I think I remember.
There was some bizarre suggestion about being propped up on a boat trying to flip beer mats off bottles with an oar.
Oh.
Sounds like a standard Saturday night in Leeds docks, to be fair. Yeah,
not far on.
On the topic of rugby as well, we do have in Huddersfield, we've got a rugby football lodge. I think it's in Huddersfield, right, yes, at least. Yes. Which is obviously the birthplace of rugby league is Huddersfield, where we broke away and rebelled. I think that's for both codes, but perhaps they might be interested or know a group of people that will be.
I think it's one of those things, isn't it? I think I've been massively impressed just seeing the real kind of surge in activity across social media, not just for rugby, but Like Blues clubs actually, you know, in general. I mean, obviously you guys have just like shot out of nowhere, really, haven't you? You know, in terms of your social media presence,
that is
in
all
terms
Matthew's
of all the stuff
work
you've been doing.
Yeah, that is all, you know, Matthew's hard work.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what? But you know what? Genuinely, it's been fantastic, and just seeing all the stuff that you guys have been doing, you know, really proactively going out there and creating content for people is awesome, really. And obviously, it's what's great to see as well, I think, is the kind of working with the other guys. You know, as you said, Sars and I know Mitch. Well, Mitch Bryan from Sarsen, mm-hmm, and Ryan Hartley, and then obviously, you know, Barry and Jack Saunders from Essex Cornerstone and Elliot Chevin, all of those guys.
Yeah, we were
yeah, they're great guys.
Matty, we were lucky enough to have them on our podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're great guys. Yeah, Matty from Ross and Semper, you know, all these guys who, along with you, are just making the best of what is obviously a really tricky situation. So, it's been fantastic to see. it really has been. So, I mean, have you guys felt like, kind of turning the question on you guys, what made you want to, what made you think, have that kind of light bulb moment of, right, we're going to really kind of go out there and proactively push Leeds like Blues?
We kind of realised that Freemasonry was going to get suspended, and we realised that if we didn't do something, there was a risk that nobody might. And that's probably the same with all of the other light blues clubs in their provinces. And of course, all our provinces have stepped up and kind of they're doing their own thing as well. But we realised that we've kind of got a niche that we'd kind of provide, and we just had to step up and do something. And whether it worked or didn't work, it didn't matter, but at least we tried. And luckily it's worked, including this podcast.
So for me, I received an email before lockdown was official and before Freemasonry officially went dark. I got an email saying a lecture I was due to attend had been cancelled, and that was the Provincial Talking Heads demonstration at Lodge Acacia. Got this email and I just had this moment of clarity, this epiphany almost of, oh, well, if this goes, then it's likely a whole bunch of other stuff will go as well. And we're in a place that we've got the technology to pick this up. We've, you know, in my day-to-day job, I have remote meetings every day anyway, so we can do this. So I sent an email there and then to the Lodge Secretary just saying, can you put me in touch with the lecturer? Do you think he'd be willing to deliver it online for us? And put me in touch with Tim there, and he was well up for it. That was how that started. We had then strategy meetings to figure out how all this was work, but it was just this sort of moment of, well, there's this hole and there's this we can fill it with, and the strategy meeting, all sorts of other ideas came to light too. It was a absolute team effort.
And of course, by the time that this podcast goes live, we'll be just about to do our sixth lecture, I think. And we're getting some really, really interesting people that actually want to do lectures for us as well, where traditionally they might have just done it in a lodge and it'd have gone to a senior lodge, maybe a lodge of past master's lodge or something like that. People have stepped up again, so it's been amazing reception.
You had Christine on last week, did you?
We did. Yeah, we
on
did.
On the podcast, yeah.
Christine's brilliant, isn't she?
Yeah, talking about lectures though, Leicester and Rutland had the 2020 Pristonian lecturer.
They did.
Did anyone else go to that? That was a really great talk.
I didn't, unfortunately, but I know that the Masons of California, they're also getting that lecture as well. So that I'm not too sure when the date for that is, but that is also still possible to attend online if you want to seek it out. For me, the hardest thing for us was, for want of a better phrase, Sean, just having the balls to do it.
Yeah, it's always the first step, isn't it?
And it was just a case of getting it out of there, starting something that we didn't really ask for permission to do, we just did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the podcast in particular, I'd had the idea for a while. I don't know if you remember, we met before at the university's conference in Cheshire.
Yes, no, I do. Yeah, I thought you looked familiar.
And I did ask the question at the time, what guidance did UGLE have on podcasts? And the response pretty much I got was, well, we haven't really got one at the moment.
No, that's pretty much it, yeah.
So I kind of took the initiative there and thought, well,
didn't tell us not to.
That was our way of kind of reaching out to our members and the wider audience who wanted to stay engaged with Freemasonry. And I think that it's bringing it home to them, and that they know us already. It's just continuing what we can at home, and that's it, really. So
yeah.
I think what surprised Josh, Matt and myself and the other founders is that it's gone international. We've had people come on the lectures from New Zealand. We've had returning people, several people from Barbados. We've
fantastic.
Had people from
Kofi, who got a shout out earlier in the guest bit. Kofi from Barbados has been a repeated guest.
We've had Iceland.
Devon from South Africa.
Yeah,
from Johannesburg,
New Zealand.
Olaf from Iceland.
Olaf from
we've
Iceland.
Had Portugal, wow. And then the listeners to the podcast, we're seeing them come in from Mexico and from all over the world.
It's just awesome, isn't it? It just shows it. And we always say, I mean, part of the thing that has been a big part of my work in the last, going back to the start of 2019, is myself and my colleague Dean Simmons, who, Matt, you would have also, I think, met potentially at the UniSkiing conference in Chester. We've been, the two of us have been going around the provinces. We've done, I think, 32 now, delivering digital workshops. So it's taking social media best practice, it's taking, you know, websites, uploading to FMT, basically pitching it at a basic level. And what we try to say to people that we meet when we do these is that, you know, I don't think people realise quite how massive the potential is for this stuff, and the potential reach is absolutely huge. And what you've just said is a great example of it. You know, you're talking to people in Mexico. I mean, it's absolutely mad, you know, that we're talking about Freemasonry. And the other thing is that this stuff, some people we find are often quite skeptical, as I'm sure we've all come across people in our lodges who maybe don't quite buy into social media or the benefits of digital comms and that sort of thing. But when you start to tell them about potential and the fact that, you know, the reach that this stuff does have and the audiences that we can reach that we've never really been able to access before, really, we've never really had access, I think, to that kind of 21 to 35 bracket so easily as we have now. And now we can go out there and we're actively, you know, reaching these people for free. And all we have to do is provide some good and engaging content and hope for the best sort of thing, and hope that what we're putting out there is enough to convince people that Freemasonry is this fantastic thing to be a part of, you know, and it adds so much to your life and so much to your, you know, as be it as a hobby, even just as something that you're interested in from a historical point of view. For me, it's worth shouting from the rooftops about, and I don't think we've done that very well in the past. Mm. I hope that now we're doing it a lot more, and things like what you guys are doing and a lot of the other like blues clubs are doing are obviously fantastic examples of that.
Personally, I do feel that the comms team at United Grand Lodge really now gets the internet. You guys understand how social media works. There's an engagement there now, especially with the things like Time to Toast. And also when you did the April Fools recently, I found that really hilarious. We were actually all disappointed on the podcast that it wasn't real.
The
West Side Story. Yeah.
It's always an interesting one that a couple of years ago we said that Freemasons Hall was turning into a Wetherspoons. And each year, I mean, I think some Freemasons would actually probably endorse that. But I think it's always quite funny that when it comes down to April, just trying to think about, I saw a great one, I think once it was from Middlesex, and it was like a virtual apron. It was called like the ISI or something. And it was like, you press a button on your apron and it automatically tuts on your behalf and stuff like that.
It was a mobile app.
Brilliant. Yeah. We hope we are, you know, we hope that we, because I think, you know, this stuff is happening whether or not we're doing it or not. Yeah. So it's either we move with the times and we embrace it and we use it to our advantage, or we get left behind, really.
There's an external voice now as well that's been used. We were on a social media intersocial with the Grand Secretary.
Yeah.
And he was starting to talk about the fact that we're starting to use an external voice. And you can see that in the social media and in the things that are being published and on the website. There's a different tone externally now, which it's not incorrect, it's not wrong, it's factual, but it's in a language that people that aren't Masons can understand, and it makes us more approachable. So,
And it's
informal, isn't it? It's approachable. I think that's what's going to make the big difference.
That's something that, you know, we have to be aware of, just different audiences. And that's what another thing that we always say with FMT and just anything that we know is going public. And when myself and Dean give our digital workshop, we're always saying to people, you know, people who aren't Freemasons, they don't know what WBRO means. You know, they don't know what this terminology is. So if someone's first experience of Freemasonry confuses them, that's about the worst start you can possibly get. So we want people's first experience of Freemasonry, their first interaction with the craft, to be positive and interesting and engaging. And if you're losing them, you know, in the first sentence of an article or in the first sentence of a social media post with language that they don't really understand or that sounds different or odd to them, you can forget about it. So yeah, it's about making the content as accessible as we can.
So I've recently just joined the Royal Arch comms team, just to start looking at things like Instagram and some of the graphics. There's someone else running everything else, but just to kind of look at other ideas and other scopes. It's really interesting and it's going well, but it's just interesting to see how it all works behind the scenes as well from that perspective.
Yeah. I mean, again, another thing is, you know, we've seen some fantastic stuff coming out from all the provinces. You guys are lucky in terms of, you know, you've got a David Simster and Edward Sisling who head up your comms operation in Yorkshire West Ridings. And, you know, those two guys know their stuff.
Yeah.
When we came up to Leeds, you know, just talking, meeting the comms team in the province, it's clear, you know, that they know what they're talking about, and that, you know, you can see that from the quality of the stuff that they produce and the articles that we get sent, you know, for FMT and stuff. So, and that's actually, I think, more than ever consistent across the board now. You know, we're seeing high quality of content consistently, which is really obviously awesome from our point of view, because it means that everyone's doing a good job. It obviously makes our lives 10 times easier.
It would only be right, being the first time on the podcast, if you gave us a summary of the top three lodges that you have ever visited.
Oh, that's tough.
So what are they?
I should bookend this by saying that actually, you know what? I haven't actually done much visiting. I've been a Freemason for 5 years. I've not actually done as much as I would like to do. But I think top three would have to be West Kent Wheel of Friendship Lodge. That is a lodge I've visited several occasions. I know a lot of the guys in there, you know, nice group of guys, always been extremely welcoming. I'd say the second one, another West Kent one actually, would probably be Harvey Lodge, which I visited, I think it was the start of this year. Yeah, I witnessed the Provincial Grand Master of West Kent, Mark Esto, performed the third degree ceremony, and it was as word perfect as you can possibly be. It was fantastic seeing, again, just such a fantastic welcome from all the guys there. And it's a bit of a toss up. I should have asked this stipulation here. Can you say you can't say your own lodge? I presume that's probably cheating, isn't it?
I mean,
you should give a plug to your own lodge.
I'll tell you what, I will.
Give a plug to your own lodge. Yeah,
I'm going to do it. Let's
make your own rules up.
Absolutely, Letchworth Lodge, which is you know, the lodge that I'm actually a member of. It's a London lodge. It's the staff lodge at UJLE, and it also includes, you know, it's meant to basically include staff at FMH, but it also now includes you know, former staff and people at Mark Mason's Hall also come along, and it's just such a fantastic atmosphere. You know, you get some really interesting characters turn up, and you know, it's got a lot of history in the lodge, and it's relaxed as well, which actually, to be honest with you, as a member, I prefer a relaxed lodge. I've been to a couple of lodges before where I literally feel like I'm at Sandhurst. You know, I remember it was an installation, I had to do the perambulation around the lodge room, and I literally felt like I was getting beasted on the Who Dares Wins SAS program that goes out on Channel 4. And it's just like, I don't know if I enjoy this, to be honest, because I've come along for a nice time and I feel like I'm being shouted at. I'm going to be asked to do 10 press-ups in a minute or something. but no, Letchworth is just a nice lodge, and you always come away feeling like you've had a good time. So if ever you guys find yourselves down in London, let me know and we'll get you along.
We'll definitely take you up on that offer. So in the meantime, though, let's raise a glass then to Sean's Lodges.
Sean's Lodges. Who was Letchworth? Because I know that the shop down in Freemasons Hall is also called Letchworth's.
Yes, I believe Letchworth was a past Grand Secretary.
Right.
And I think officially Letchworth is supposed to be the lodge of the Grand Secretary and his staff. You know, we've got Commander Michael Higham, who's a former Grand Secretary, Nigel Brown, a number of the former Grand Secretaries, you know, are still members.
And of course, you obviously share a lodge, I take it, with Dr. David Staples as well. He's there. We had him on the Interclub Social not so long ago. That was really insightful.
Awesome. I think I heard back from a couple. I think I heard back from Barry on that. He said it was a really good. The good thing about David Staples is that he's so happy and willing to do that sort of thing, and actually extremely passionate about it, and he gets it. And from a comms point of view, that's so important, just having someone in charge who understands it and gets the challenges and gets the necessity of comms. It's invaluable from our point of view. So to have that support from, you know, such a high level is obviously, it's brilliant. And in terms of the event, like, how was it structured? Was it just like a bit like this, or was it David did a bit of speaking and stuff? How did it work out?
It was a little bit like this one, and the different organisations, the different clubs, they talked to each other and introduced their clubs, what they do, their initiatives. And then obviously the Grand Secretary did a little bit of a speech, talked about his history in Freemasonry and the involvement that he's got and the initiatives that he's driving. And then it predominantly was just a question and answer session, allowing younger and newer Masons to kind of speak to David and the Grand Secretary, to kind of get to know him and learn a little bit more about what he does, what his day looks like, how things operate, things that what's going to be changing, all of that side of things, which was really amazing and a very unique experience, particularly for younger Masons up north in like the Leeds Light Blues, because obviously we're not down in Freemasons Hall. So,
no.
Yeah.
It was nice just to have that informal approach. And I think both with the Twitter initiative that David did.
The Ask Me Anything. Yeah, Ask the Grand Sec.
Pretty much Ask the Grand Sec, yeah. That, along with the Interclub Social, I think was incredibly useful and incredibly insightful.
That's awesome.
And so definitely, I would say, feedback from the branches into the centre. Mm. More stuff like that, please, because that was brilliant.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I like that someone asked one of my favourite questions of all time, which is, would you rather fight a horse-sized duck or a dozen duck-sized horses?
Yeah. What was the answer to that? Was it? It was a dozen
duck-sized horses. Always. Yeah. It's the only right answer to that question.
There you go.
Putting it out there.
Getting to the nub of the issue here with Dr. David Staples.
Exactly. Yeah, who would have thought that Grand Lodge would have tweeted about that like 10 years ago? Who would have thought?
A statement.
How has your Freemasonry changed, Sean? So obviously, since you've joined the communications team and media at Grand Lodge, has it changed your Freemasonry in any way? Has it enhanced it? Has it been any sort of like perhaps detriment to attendance or anything? Or I mean, obviously, you've got to live, breathe Freemasonry enough to actually live. You know, pretty much, you practically live in there. You're spending that much time there, surely. So how does that work for you?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think I've been lucky in the sense that I've been able to visit, as I say, 32 different provinces. Unfortunately, I've not actually been able to get to any Masonic meetings when I've been going out, which would have been fantastic. But I find that actually it's interesting in terms of my actual experience of Freemasonry. It's actually weird to just do it. I spend so much of my time talking about it. And, you know, talking about the fantastic sides of it and how brilliant it is. Hmm. When I actually kind of sit down in a meeting, it's kind of like, all right, this is weird because this is the actual thing. And I'm actually wearing my apron and I've got my gloves on and, oh, I'm sat at the festive board now and I'm eating and I'm talking about, you know, and I'm having a good time. And then it's kind of odd then to go back the next day and kind of talk about it again. And it is interesting. And it actually, I think, has enhanced the experience because it's made me a lot more passionate about it. And actually, in my role, especially as editorial manager of the magazine, I see firsthand the fantastic work that our members do all around the provinces and the districts. You know, I read the stories about all these charitable donations that go through and, you know, all the volunteering time that our members give up and just the, you know, the integral role that our members actually have in their communities. I see that for every day firsthand.
So of all the great things you've seen, you write about, you talk about, what's the thing you'd have liked to be involved in most?
Oh, that's tough. Yeah, that's a very good question. I think, to be honest with you, one of the things that I think particularly stands out for me more than any is actually some of the COVID stuff that I've seen since lockdown. And, you know, seeing the work, I mean, Colin Breckens, who's a Norfolk Freemason, who has essentially been making, I think, literally tens of thousands of visors for, and, you know, PPE equipment for emergency services, you know, people on the front line. And he's actually been nominated for, I think it's called like the Telegraph Lockdown Award, as someone who has really stepped up, you know. And I'm reading his article that I think was in the local press in Norfolk about how it was like 2 a.m. and he had ambulance crews turning up at his front door to collect visors. And then 5 a.m, he had police officers turning up at his front door to collect this stuff. And he says, literally constant. And although that obviously sounds grueling and you'll think, well, you know, why on earth would you like that element of it? I think being able to kind of look back on this experience in our lives in like this absolutely bizarre circumstance that none of us could have ever predicted was going to happen. And to be him and be able to look back, and like many of our members who have obviously, you know, be it turning a gin distillery into a hand sanitizer factory, you know, another Freemason in Lincolnshire who did that, you know, all around the country doing this stuff. I think to be able to look back on this time and think, yeah, you know what, I actually properly stepped up and did something to help the community, the society, the country. I think that's probably would be the thing that I would say, yeah, that would be for me what I'd want to have done.
Going to UJLE communications initiatives, mm-hmm. There's been quite a few of them in the last couple of years, certainly. What was your favourite initiative that you got involved in?
I think for me, again, it's biased because myself and Dean were the architects of it, but the digital workshops, I think, have been massive for us in terms of getting out there and talking to people and actually meeting our members face-to-face. I think in the past, there was a perception, especially as we went around, people often saying to us, you know, it's actually quite nice to see someone from Grand Lodge to, you know, kind of ordained to come and speak to us face-to-face. I think it's been really great. Since Michelle came on board as our director, you know, so much has changed for the better. in terms of, you know, Open House London, which was a massive deal. You know, I think in previous years, we did it over one day, and I think we had over 2,000 or 3,000, and then we moved it over the whole weekend, and we ended up with 8,000-9,000 people through the doors. And wow. You know, those are people who probably, I think it's probably quite fair to say, are not very knowledgeable about Freemasonry, and who were walking around the building were saying, you know, this is fantastic. This is not what I thought it was at all. Hang on a minute. Aren't you guys meant to be, you know, secretive and stuff? Well, why are you opening the doors to your building, and why are we allowed to? And it's like, well, yeah, exactly. You know, that's what we've been saying to you all along.
Breaking that stigma down.
Yeah. And actually just seeing people's faces as they walked into the Grand Temple and just being amazed. And we had Freemasons there in regalia, kind of walking around, talking to them, explaining to them about Freemasonry and why they joined. It was brilliant. A great example of that culture shift in terms of, I think for so long we allowed people just to pretty much say what they wanted about us with no consequence, no comeback. And of course, mm-hmm. what happens when you don't come back is that's just accepted as truth. And mm-hmm. we didn't fill that void for a long time. And now, you know, in the last few years, we've been a lot more proactive in actually saying, you know what, that's not right. And that is wrong. And that probably comes onto the last initiative, which was the Enough is Enough campaign, which was obviously, you know, a little while ago now. But that was, I think, very much a turning point for us in terms of saying, actually, you know, that story was a complete, pretty much a complete falsehood. You know, falsehood. There was very little truth in it. And actually, we're not just going to sit back and take it. We are going to proactively go out and challenge it. And we're not going to let those things lie. And David Staples says, you know, he would be perfectly happy to do another one of those. You know, if the press want to continue making stuff up about us, then we're not just going to take it anymore. You know, we're going to proactively combat these misconceptions. And that's pretty much what you see happening now across our comms channels. Wherever we see it, we call it out.
And the rank and file members appreciated that probably more than you guys realized at the time. You know, the fact that someone was saying, no, these are our members and we're going to back them and look after them.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. It's good to hear stuff like that. And I think again, I'm lucky in a way because I get to see, you know, the best of Freemasonry. I get to see, you know, and when I talk to people, as I said at the start, I think what we don't have still is an elevator pitch. Why should someone want to become a Freemason? I've got 2 minutes to convince you why you should become a Freemason. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure we're there yet, but, you know, that's work that we're undertaking now. You know, what the term Michelle uses, it, you know, it's the power of the 200,000. You know, we have 200,000 people who are passionate about Freemasonry, and it's about using their experiences, using their stories and that passion that they have for Freemasonry to try and encourage other people to join. And we hope that that's kind of effective and good enough to get people through the door.
Yeah. Question kind of very much closely related to what you've just said there. About engaging prospective Masons. And one thing that we're certainly really proud of is that when we have our socials, we're all very open. We're very open to people coming and asking us. And we do get it quite frequently, don't we, guys, of people coming and asking what we're about, what we do. And we're very open about it. We know we're Freemasons. And obviously we get the usual 21 questions about that. We answer them honestly. Do you in the centre see new and young Masons clubs kind of getting involved with that and kind of spread that word of, yeah. Of what we're about and, you know, being that sort of team?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And actually, it's things like this, isn't it? It's things like proactivity that you guys have shown in getting out there and spreading the word and changing, you know, challenging those misconceptions. You know, some people's misconceptions are even that, you know, you can't be a Freemason if you're under the age of 50. So seeing Freemasons who are younger than 50 of different ethnic minority backgrounds is already challenging misconceptions from how I see it. So I think new and young Masons clubs have a massive role in that because that Freemasonry is a force for good. You know, it has such a positive role to play in our communities and our societies. And actually, I think to hear it from a wide range of people, not just from, you know, a single source or a provincial grandmaster or someone, I think to hear it from, as I think you described, you know, the rank and file, a member, a normal person, you know, who does this as a hobby and works full time and all that sort of stuff, I think is also really effective. But I think actually the diversity of a message as well, you know, having it from all different groups, you know, we always say about, oh, you know, we need to be attracting younger people. Well, yeah, but actually I don't think we should forget about older people as well. You know, we need to be appealing to all different sections of society and making sure that we're offering them an enjoyable experience because people retire, they then have a lot more time on their hands. And actually I think Freemasonry would be perfect to fill that void. But in answer to your question, Absolutely. I think new and young Masons clubs have a real pivotal role to play in that entire process.
Awesome. Thank you. So what would you like to see as like the next phase for communications, and whether it's a case of internal projects or perhaps any missions that you currently want to do, where you see it going, or even
Masonic,
if it's just
TikTok?
Definitely not that, but any, we had Christine Chapman mention that last week, and we agreed that no Masonic order needs that right now.
Why not?
I agree. I remember once someone mentioned to me, someone said, oh, have you considered the UGLE Snapchat? And I thought, absolutely not. I've never considered that. Can you imagine? I mean, we get sent enough weird stuff on social media as it is. Can you imagine what we would get on Snapchat? Oh, my goodness. And I would be the person who'd have to sit there going through it, I think, burning it in some kind of fire somewhere. But in answer to your question, in terms of, you know, where I would like to see things in a couple of years, I think in terms of what we've got going on at the moment, I think more of the same. I think, you know, let's keep pushing on with a lot of this member engagement that we've been doing, you know, talking to you guys more, you know, listening to our members a lot more, communicating with you, you know, finding out how you think things should be done, I think is really important. That's a big part of my job, listening to you guys, seeing how you think things can be improved, and then reporting that back up FMH, keeping those communication lines open constantly between, you know, new and young Masons Club, Light Blues Club. I think there's so much potential for Light Blues clubs, new and young Mason clubs around the country, and that's been demonstrated through this period of lockdown. We've got a real strong foundation in our membership of people who are really willing to embrace this new technology stuff, and that's extremely encouraging from my point of view. So I'd like to see more of that, and I think also, again, more of the same, in the sense that a kind of a Grand Lodge where we're out there in society, we're regularly getting positive news stories. You know, Freemasonry isn't a dirty word. It's not something that people kind of wince at when they hear it. It doesn't automatically make people kind of think of, you know, the Stonecutter Simpsons episode. And I think we've done a lot of work to that end. And I think if in a couple of years, if we continue as we are, I'm confident that we get to a point where actually people see us for what we really are, rather than what they've heard we are from an oddball on YouTube.
I will apologise. We may have undone some of your hard work. We regularly reference that Simpsons episode.
Yeah.
It's a good episode.
actually, you know what? It's like things like that. I'd like to get to the point where we don't have to shy away from that. You know, I think there's a lot of value in laughing at ourselves and actually playing on those stereotypes and just kind of not taking ourselves so seriously. I think that goes a long way to even things like on social media, like, you know, we love things like, you know, using emojis and stuff like that, just because it's like, yeah, we're not taking ourselves too seriously. You know, we know that this is how you create good, engaging content by, and sometimes you have to laugh at yourself. You know, you have to put yourself in audiences. We created that Star Wars video, you know, a year or two ago. People wouldn't have expected that from us, you know, just little things like that. And from a raw light social media marketing point of view, being able to reach that, you know, that's the top global trending topic, you know, on May the 4th, isn't it? You know, being able to put that message about Freemasonry out there is awesome. And we need to be able to laugh at ourselves more. So I would love to see some kind of like some day where we can, you know, joke about the Stonecutter Simpsons episode on our Twitter page. What an ambition. There you go. What a goal.
Do it.
Sometimes it is just a case of just doing it and just waiting for the reaction. I mean, obviously there has to be a bit more tact, because obviously, you know, you kind of are the Grand Lodge and you kind of do need to do that. And I'll be honest, I did have an element of not fear in my mind when Matthew said to me, you know, we're going to have Sean Butler on. I'm like, oh, right. Is he coming on to shut us down unceremoniously? I'm like, is this the end of our Masonic careers? But no, it's I see that day coming.
We've chatted a lot about kind of one side of your role, which is the digital media side.
Yep.
But obviously you're heavily involved with the print media side, with the Freemasonry Today magazine. Yep. And first of all, do you see a future for print media? Because I absolutely love it. I think it's really special when you get something through the post. And I keep all my Freemasonry Todays. And I read them cover to cover every time they come. Give it to my other half, my better half. That gets a read there as well. Yeah. And I do see a big value in that as well. But I am partially concerned that as generations change, there may be a different thought process whether that there's value to that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm exactly the same as you. I love like getting any kind of, you know, magazine and stuff. You know, when you get a subscription to them, I used to be, you know, subscribed to, what was it called, Match Magazine, when I was like 13. it's like just a football magazine that I used to absolutely, and I remember just like the excitement of that coming through the letterbox was brilliant. And FMT as well, you know, I think that is very much a membership perk. You know, it's something that you're a Freemason under UGLE, you get that magazine delivered to you, and a lot of hard work and time has gone into making that as interesting and as engaging as possible. And I think, you know, we do move with the times with the magazine. You know, it's obviously available as a PDF. You can sign up to the mailing list so that it gets delivered to your email. You know, you can ask not to have a print copy, that sort of thing. But I think, you know, as long as people want it and as long as people get enjoyment out of it, you know, it's definitely something that we should always stick to, because as I say, I agree with you. I think actually, although, you know, you see magazine sales dwindle and that sort of thing, I think this is slightly different. You know, with FMT, it's not a product that we're selling. It's much an informative membership magazine which keeps everyone in the loop, which is you know, made with the intention to inform and engage with members from all over the provinces and now districts as well. You know, it's also sent to districts, so I think it's still got a massive role to play.
Freemasonry Today obviously had a rebrand very recently. Were you involved with that? How much time did that take, and kind of how did that process work?
Yeah, so not really, if I'm honest. I became editorial manager in August of last year. So Dean Simmons, who's my colleague at UGLE, he's now web content manager. He used to be editorial manager of the magazine, so he was kind of more working on that than I was at that time. The reason for that was I think they just felt that I needed a bit of a freshener, and it needed a bit, you know, modernising. It needed to look a bit more interesting. And we've had some interesting reviews on, you know, FMT and what people think of that. And obviously we take that into consideration. But I don't know, what are your guys' thoughts on it? Do you like the new designs? Do you enjoy reading it?
I remember seeing the old design, so I've got nothing to compare to. But I really enjoy the content.
I got given it as a gift recently, an old edition. Was it Q, I think it was called?
Yeah.
Or I think a long time ago. Anyway, there we go. Matthew's holding up a couple of old editions of it. It reads well.
Yeah.
And it's classy. It's classy. There does need to be an element of class still involved with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
To make it, you know, a worthwhile publication to pick up. No one wants to see Freemasonry Today turn into the sun. So, you know, it's...
that.
So it's good, Sean. I like it. I enjoy it.
I love the content. I'd like to see a couple more adverts aimed towards other generations as well.
You mean you don't need a stair lift?
I do appreciate that the majority of Freemasons might be more interested in some of those, and obviously advertisement, that's how advertisements work.
Yeah.
And I've always wanted to go on a river cruise.
But the most important question of all, and that's just almost alluded to it, is have you been on one of the Freemasonry Today advertised holidays? Because they are the best deals I've ever seen.
I haven't, but what I could say is that I have got a lovely walk-in bath that I picked up. No, I haven't really. pair of suede moccasins that I picked up from the last edition. No, I haven't again. No, you know what, I'm serious. Yeah, you know, I think obviously in some ways it's what companies obviously we approach to put in. That's something that's done separately from us. Yeah. But it's a discussion that we've had, just making the adverts more relevant to more people. And also I think maybe less inserts has been some of the feedback that we have.
Mm. As long as the holidays stay, I'm fine.
That's what Josh and I text when the Freemasonry Today comes in the post. We go, where's the holiday this week, this time? You know, shall
how
we
much
go?
Free wine have we got this time around?
Abu Dhabi.
Abu Dhabi was a good one.
Yeah.
Abu Dhabi looked good.
Oh, I didn't know about that one. That's a cracker.
It was only about 100 quid.
It was. And unfortunately, I was honestly going to ring up there and then and book it. My other half didn't have enough leave left.
Oh, no.
And I couldn't rightly go without her.
Well, yeah.
So obviously your role comes with a great deal of satisfaction, seeing things evolve, seeing things grow, in particular social media. From the last time that we met, a lot of your role also involves not policing as such, but monitoring to ensure that the right message of Freemasonry is getting out there. Can you tell us some horror stories that you've come across that you've had to promptly shut down?
Oh God, yeah, so many. I mean, anyone who has even for a second looked at or managed a Masonic social media account will know the depths of just quite dark sinister content that sometimes infiltrates our...
Josh is smiling.
our output. But essentially, it's one of those things where if you put above you put your head above the parapet and things like social media, it's an open gateway for anyone and everyone to come and say what they like. And very much part of my role from the social media side is obviously policing that. And we've all seen, you know, the Illuminati, text this number, send me 300. I mean, there's been a number of occasions where, you know, I've received messages from people saying, you know, look, I've paid my $300 American to Western Union. When's my initiation date? It's just, unfortunately, I think it's one of those things. We have a zero tolerance. You know, obviously anything we see like that is immediately blocked. We remove them. They're kind of eviscerated from every social media channel that we have. But unfortunately, it's an ongoing, constant problem that we have, you know, on a daily basis. These things are posting content and comments on our stuff and provincial accounts and stuff to a lesser extent. And maybe even with you guys, I'm not sure. But it's an ongoing battle that we have, unfortunately. In terms of other horror stories, political stuff is always cringe for me because it's such an obvious no-no. And I feel like when you see that, it's really disheartening because you think Freemasonry is obviously meant to bring us together and it excludes those things that traditionally divide us. So when you see people going back to that and reverting back to those sorts of things, and obviously in the last 18 months, that's been a lot more prevalent than probably it ever has been mm-hmm. on social media in the past, with obviously the different debates going on in the country. It's taken a lot of work and people are often mortified and extremely apologetic when we say to them, look, would you ever so nicely, you know, we say to them ever so nicely, would you mind just taking that down? Because obviously you've identified yourself as XYZ in the province of XYZ. And we have had cases in the past, you know, we've heard from provinces of someone putting something out on social media and getting a call from a local press, you know, reporter basically saying, you know, is this the official view of the province of whatever it may be? And you just think, oh, crikey, you know, that's not good. But as I said, nature of the beast, we're on top of it. You know, we do what we can. And we obviously just encourage members when they see that sort of stuff, when they see that sort of spam stuff, just report it. And they're actually usually quite good in taking them down. So, yeah, if you see it, report it.
What are some of the most exciting things that you've seen people spontaneously create? Hashtag Time to Toast was probably top of that list. But are there any others?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, Time to Toast, I'm not just saying this because I'm here, but I think it's been inspiring to see what you guys have been up to. Just, again, the upsurge in content, again, from a number of, like, blues clubs. You know, you guys, obviously, the first that come to mind, because I'm sat here talking to you, but, you know, launching a podcast series, you know, reaching out, getting all these different people to give lectures on you know, such a wide range of interesting topics, providing that member content for people is such a vital thing, and using social media to do that, reach those audiences, fantastic. The Time to Toast campaign, just to go back on that, was something that was the brainchild of Brian Durrant, who's a Freemason from Hampshire and Isle of Wight. All we did was essentially piggyback on it, really. We saw how successful it was going in Hampshire and Isle of Wight, and we thought, fantastic, you know, we want to kind of join in on that. And to see Time to Toast trending nationally on Twitter was pretty cool, actually. You know, that was a nice thing to see. And we kept it going. You know, we got, you know, all the rulers took part and, you know, both Craft and Royal Arch. So, yeah, it was nice to see. And any time you see the community of Freemasons on Twitter or social media generally coming together, I think it's awesome. And another example, I think, was Steve Blake, who's a Freemason from Hampshire and Isle of Wight. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Steve. He's an army photographer, you know, who served in Afghanistan and a number of other places. And he's diagnosed with a brain tumor not long ago. And he's been raising money for using the Masonic Twitter pin badges. I don't know if you guys have seen. And you know, that sort of thing.
He's raised a fortune in that, hasn't he?
Raised thousands of pounds. Thousands.
Just selling little badges. Right. Which, yeah, listeners, it's just a Twitter logo with a little square and compass on the top.
Yeah, little Twitter logo with a square and compass. The other thing, you know, I've seen in Dorset have created some T-shirts, kind of worked in the square and compass with the NHS, you know, logo for during these times. You know, things like that are just awesome. Often produces quite a fantastic result, i.e. with Steve, i.e. with the Dorset stuff. And obviously, as you guys, what you guys have created here.
I'm sure. And just on that topic of Time to Toast, brethren, the hands are thereabouts square, So let's raise a glass and remember absent brethren.
Absent brethren. What do you think Freemasons can do to keep brothers up to date with the latest technologies and things like social media, some of our older and less technologically advanced brothers? I think the current situation has kind of been a catalyst for them coming on to WhatsApp and things like that.
Yeah.
I can't help but think one of the big learnings is that we shouldn't have been in a position where we had so many brothers that didn't feel comfortable with that before a situation like this arose. And what can Freemasonry do, as in general, not just the comms team, and at all levels, to make sure that we don't end up in that position if a situation ever happens in the future?
No, absolutely. I think in some ways it's a big culture shift generally in society, isn't it, that we've seen as a result of COVID and seeing people literally be forced, if they want to talk to someone, you know, they have to use these things. That's how you communicate when we're apart now. That's just how it is. I think in terms of how Freemasons can kind of help out, you know, our members who maybe aren't as well-versed in using this sort of thing, I think it's two ways, really. I think the first one is reassuring them that actually it's not actually something to be afraid of. There's not this horrible monster at the end of these things, mobiles or computers, and cause them all sorts of stress. Actually, these things are really straightforward and easy. That's very much the first step. If you can get people to a point where they're comfortable enough just to even consider things and learn a little bit more about it. And then I think we actually do play a part. Part of what we're putting together at the moment are a series of toolkits. We call them toolkits. They're kind of like guides on a number of different areas, be it social media, be it using WhatsApp, as general as online communication toolkits. And these come in the guise of basically three ways. There's a PDF, there's a printed copy, and there's an animation. And they're very accessible. They're designed and written to be accessible to people that maybe aren't as well versed with this sort of stuff. And it's entry level. It's the basics, as basic as you can get. And what we hope, you know, when we've got the complete suite of 9 or 10 of these, is that we'll roll these out to the provinces, and provinces can then send these on to lodges, who can then obviously hopefully use them, you know, lodge mentors, be it whoever. Lodge comms guys can then take those documents and those little animations and sit down with those members who perhaps aren't as comfortable and give them to them, you know, so they can use them and proactively. So then hopefully we can get to a point where, yeah, as we say, you know, people do feel more confident going forward.
What has been your favourite moment in Freemasonry, or favourite moment in general, being at UGLE on the staff there? What's it been for you?
I think the real standout moment, I'm going to be cheeky and I'm going to say two. Sorry, guys. I think the first one was the Royal Albert Hall tercentenary event. I was lucky enough to go along to that, and I was doing social media for it and stuff. And it was just such a fantastic day. I don't know if any of you guys were lucky enough to get down there. It was Freemasonry as I'd never really seen it before. You know, it was interesting. It was engaging for people. It kind of gave a whistle stop tour on our history and what we were about and stuff. And it was really cool and interesting to see. The second best thing probably as a member of staff at UGLE is probably the Victoria Cross stone unveiling that we had last year. Really cool. And actually just, you know, seeing the Grand Master at that event and marking obviously what was such a poignant and touching ceremony was incredibly special. And you know, obviously Freemasonry and Victoria Cross, there's so many recipients who are actually were Freemasons, as you see when you go out the front of the tower entrance at Freemasons Hall, the paving stones there.
Wasn't the Prestonian lecture that year about Freemasonry in the Great War and covered a whole lot of those stories and people?
Yeah, it was just, I think the stars aligned in so many ways that year, because obviously it was our tercentenary, and then obviously we had the Victoria Cross stones unveiling out the front, and then obviously just seeing that special. I was lucky enough that day, actually, back in 2017, I feel like it was like my third or fourth week in the job, and I was opposite, next time you're down in London, have a look, opposite Freemasons Hall, there's an Indian restaurant called Batty Tandoori, and I was actually on the roof watching the event, which was a really unique, interesting perspective of the events. But yeah, I think those two moments, but overall it's just been a real fantastic experience meeting so many interesting people, fascinating people who care so deeply about Freemasonry and share my passion for it, has been fantastic. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Thank you so much, Sean, and thank you very much for coming along to the podcast today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you. You're welcome anytime.
Thanks, guys. It's been great speaking to you.
Cheers.
Thanks, Sean. Cheers.
Let's raise a glass one more time to you, Sean.
Cheers, guys.
Sean. Sean Butler and the UGLE comms team.
Cheers, guys.
Absolutely. And hello to Michelle as well, if you're listening.
Hello, Michelle. Right then, so that pretty much wraps up our podcast. I have been your host, Brother Matt Namiria.
I slam for the Josh Doxy Turnbull.
I'm always Brother Matthew Wharton.
And I've been Sean Butler.
Hey. Good night, brethren.
That was a great insight into how social media is ran by professionals. Not the use of Microsoft Paint, like Matt once did for 200 likes on our Facebook. At least Matthew W. is half decent at putting together some graphics. Anyway, you reached the end of this hour-long episode. You think an hour is too long? Come and edit it yourself then. Peace out.